As we concluded our last lesson together, we had Gideon there and he had his men around the camp of the Midianites. And they were about to start what the Lord had sent them to do, to free the nation of Israel. But before we get into it, we're in chapter 7, verse number 19, if you want to open your Bibles. I want us to set the timing again for the battle and what had happened. Gideon and his men had arrived that very day, that day at the spring of Harod. And that day Gideon had culled the troops down from 32,000 men down to 300 men. The rest of the men were sent back to their tents. And after dark, Gideon and his servant Purah had gone over and they'd gone to the outpost of the Midianite camp. That's where the sentinels watched to warn everybody in the camp if danger was coming. And they'd gone over there and they had spied the Midianite camp there in the valley. And Gideon heard the dream and the interpretation of the dream. And when he did, it gave him courage and he worshiped the Lord there by that outpost. He goes back over to where his camp is and he divides the troops up. And he prepares them for the battle all in the same night. In fact, as we're going to find out, all between dark and 10 o'clock at night. Because 10 o'clock is when he's going to arrive there. So the night was not over. It was time to move once he had them prepared. It was time to move on these Midianites. And Gideon attacked the camp at the middle watch. And all the Israelites watched what Gideon did. And we see that in verse number 19 of chapter number 7. So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch when they had just posted the watch. And they blew the trumpets and smashed the pitchers that were in their hands. When was the middle watch? All the people in all the nations at this time and for centuries after this and before divided the dark of the night into military watches instead of watches by hours. Because the sun does not shine at night, the ability to reckon time by hours with a sundial, which they had, was impossible. In fact, they could make a sundial very easy without having one. They could do it with a stick. But without the sundial cannot be used. What about an hourglass? Well, the hourglass filled with sand as we know it today was not invented for another 2,000 years. So I'm telling you, we are unsure as to how they reckoned time during the dark, but nevertheless, they had a way to do it. The Jews did it, the Greeks did it, the Romans did it, the Arabs did it. The Jews divided the night, their night, into three watches. Romans divided into four. Jews divided into three. The first watch lasted from sunset, sun going down, until 10 o'clock. The middle watch lasted from 10 o'clock until 2 o'clock a.m. in the morning. The last watch lasted from 2 o'clock until sunrise. Sunset, sunrise, 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock. Sunset, 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock, sunrise. Each watch began with the changing of the guard. So what has just happened in our verse is the guard has just changed for the middle watch. That means it is 10 o'clock at night. Our passage tells us that Gideon arrived at that change. And that is the time when the battle was begun by the blowing of the trumpets and the smashing of the pitchers with the torches inside. So, at the middle watch, we see what the 300 did. If you're keeping up with your outline, at the middle watch, dash, what the 300 did. They did what Gideon did in verse number 20. When the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers, they held the torches in their left hand and their trumpets in their right hands for blowing, and cried, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." Each stood in his place around the camp. 300 men are spaced around the Midianite camp. The trumpets have been blown, the pitchers have been broken, and the torches were there in their hands, and the trumpets were in their hands. Their swords are on their sides, still dangling there in their sheaths. But this was a battle with pitchers and trumpets and torches. So at the beginning of the middle watch, we see what the Midianites did. We just saw at the beginning of the middle watch what the Israelites did. Here we see what the Midianites did. And what did they do? They ran. Verse 21b. And all the army ran, crying out as they fled. When they blew 300 trumpets, the Lord set the sword of one against another, even throughout the whole army. And the army fled as far as Beth Shittah, toward Zerirah, as far as the edge of Abel Meholah by Tabith, with a blast of the 300 trumpeteers. It started here, moved here, and all around. And the army looked up, and they saw the torches all the way around, 300 torches all the way around their camp. And the valley began to run. Second, as we see in this passage, the soldiers of Midian, the Amaleks, and the sons of the east began to fight each other. They killed not only their comrades as they fled. They were fleeing. Those who were not killed by their comrades in the valley, they fled off to this other location. They just ran towards the Jordan River. They ran down the Jezreel Valley all the way, and they go all the way down. Beth Shittah means the house of the acacias in Hebrews. It is a town not far from the Jordan River. They're running towards the Jordan River. This is all about the direction they're running. It's the reason why the Lord gave us these names. Zerirah is called Zerarath in the scripture, and it sits about 3 miles west of Beth Shean. Beth Shean sits at the junction of where the valley of Jezreel ends and the Jordan River valley begins. However, we are not told that the Midianites made it to Zerirah or to Beth Shean. Zerirah is mentioned for the sole purpose of recording for us the direction that they're fleeing. As the Midianites flee from the valley, they're not going north, they're not going west, they're not going south. They're going east. They're headed home from where they had come from that day. They ran east, or I should say the previous, well, that day, because they were camped there that day. We are also told that they ran to the edge of Abel Meholah by Tabith. Abel Meholah means the meadow of dancing. And it sat on the west side of the Jordan River, 10 miles south of Beth Shean. So it's quite a distance. He just tells us the direction by Zerirath and down to Abel Meholah. Abel Meholah, we will hear later on, many years later, because it's the birthplace of Elisha, several hundred years into the future. That's in 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 16. The word edge means the lip. Now, in this case, it was the lip of the meadow by Tabith. And it means the cliff where the valley ends with this steep descent that goes down to the Jordan River. Tabith means to celebrate. And it is mentioned only in this verse here. It is the place that the Jews, the army of Gideon, is going to celebrate because of the destruction that's going to happen at Tabith. It is mentioned only here. It's set by the meadow of dancing, but where we do not know, because it was the location of the battle. Now, if it happens to be, according to Smith's Bible Dictionary, the current location of Tubakarak Fahil, it has a natural bank, which fits the text, that goes down from the edge 600 feet on the embankment on the west side there, goes down descending in a steep 600 feet drop down to the river. They were up against something they couldn't pass by at that point, in other words. The point being made in this passage is that the Midianite survivors, who were not killed by their comrades back in the valley near Mount Gilboa, had made it to the waters of the Jordan River that night as they ran from Gideon, 300 men army. As they ran from Gideon's 300 men army. 10 o'clock it started and they start running in the night. And in the confusion, they kill many of their comrades there. And then some of them, the remnant, goes on down. As the men in the Midianite camp fled to the river, Gideon has to call for more tribes. Verse number 23. Then the men of Israel were summoned from Naphtali and Asher and all Manasseh, and they pursued Midian. Gideon sent messengers throughout the hill country of Ephraim, saying, "Come down against Midian and take the waters before them, as far as Bethbara and the Jordan." So all the men of Ephraim were summoned, and they took the waters as far as Bethbara and the Jordan. They captured the two leaders of Midian, Oreb and Zeb, and they killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb, and they killed Zeb at the winepress of Zeb, while they pursued Midian, and they brought the head of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon from across the Jordan. These were not new men from Naphtali, Asher, and Manasseh. The muster of these new soldiers from Naphtali, Asher, and Manasseh would have taken too long. It would have taken too long for the word up to those tribal areas and for them to come down in the middle of the night and catch up. It's just too far. These new soldiers were the ones that were in the tents, that were not part, that were divided out because they were kneelers instead of lappers. Remember, they were left in the tents. These were the 300 men with Gideon also who were chasing after them, along with the rest of the men from Naphtali, Asher, and Manasseh. As for the call to the tribe of Ephraim, that was a different story. Messengers were sent south to Ephraim's land for new recruits because Gideon thought the Midianites and their allies were going to run to the western bank of the Jordan River, south until they were able to find a ford that was suitable for all of them to cross safely to the east side of the Jordan River. And once on that side of the river, they could cross through a pass in the mountains and pick up the king's highway. And from there, the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the sons of the east could split up and go their own ways. Just different ways, because on the king's highway, it went north and it went south. And there were little roads that went off to the villages of the sons of the east that lived near the desert sands. If they got to the king's highway, they could get to their homes real easy. Gideon wanted them stopped. Now, according to the text, Ephraim did its job. However they got that army together, we don't know, but Ephraim took to the west bank of the Jordan River, just out from their land, and they secured it all the way north to Bethbara. Bethbara means a place of crossing. Bethbara must have been the major ford in the Jordan River where the army could cross. We will hear of it again in chapter 12 when Jephthah kills the men of Ephraim there at Bethbara, at the place by the Jordan River. We will also hear about it in the New Testament as a place where John the Baptist will baptize believers. But because of the constant change in the river that flowed in all the different seasons, you know, rivers and creeks, they changed their direction. And the natural places where you could cross at one time in the year can be washed away the next year. And for that reason, we don't know where this crossing place called Beth Barah was. See, it wasn't the name of a village or a city. It was the name of a place to cross the river. The name means the house of the crossing or the place of the crossing. It could also be the door of the crossing. Today we are uncertain as its location of this place where the Jordan River is. Oh, we can tell you where we think it is, where John the Baptist baptized, but we're not sure. We cannot say for sure. Nevertheless, we are now told the names of the two Midianite leaders of the oppression of Israel. One was named Oreb, and the other was named Zeb. These were the Hebrew names for these Midianite leaders. It is not the names that they probably had as Midianites. It's what the Hebrews called them. These names, Oreb and Zeb, in Hebrew mean the raven and the wolf. They caught the raven and they caught the wolf. Now, the place where Oreb was killed by the Ephraimites was named by the Israelites as the whole nation as the Rock of Oreb. Many hundreds of years later, Isaiah, preaching and prophesying against Assyria and talking about the defeat of Assyria, he will compare it to the scourge the Lord sent upon the slaughter of the Midianites at this place called the Rock of Oreb. And that you can find over in Isaiah chapter 10, verse 26. Isaiah knew where the Rock of Oreb stood. And he knew about the slaughter of the thousands of Midianites and their allies by the Ephraimites. But not all the Midianites and their allies were killed at the Rock of Oreb. Many were killed with Zeb at the winepress of Zeb. In other words, that whole group of remnant who got out of the valley of Jezreel of the Midianites and the Amalekites and the sons of the east had already divided into two groups, all headed down towards getting away. As for the winepress of Zeb, Zeb did not own the winepress. The winepress was simply the place where Zeb found to hide himself on his run. The same was true of the Rock of Oreb. It was simply the place where Oreb tried to hide with his men. For the winepress of Zeb, we really do not know where it is, but the Jewish Targum tells us something. It tells us that it was a plain, a flat area that had a natural stone wall around it, that it resembled a wine press. It doesn't mean that it was a wine press. But if you looked at it from afar in that plain, Zeb and thousands of men were killed by the Ephraimites in this natural place that had this little hole there with these stones around it. And the slaughter in this place resembled a wine press. And thus, because it looked like a wine press with the blood in it, with them slaughtered there, the Hebrews and the Israelites, I should say, named this place in Hebrew the wine press of Zeb. As for the current location of the Rock of Oreb and the wine press of Zeb, both are unknown. However, both are within the boundaries of the west side of that Jordan River where the Ephraimites took control of the river valley as they were called upon to do by Gideon. They did it there, and that's where it was. Now, it's very interesting. In the days of Asaph, in our Psalms, Asaph wrote Psalm 83. Asaph cries out to the Lord to handle all the enemies of Israel in the same way that the Lord handled Oreb and Zeb. So here are verses 9 through 12 of Psalms 98. And I want you to notice more familiar names than just Oreb and Zeb, because Asaph is calling upon history for the Lord to take care of the enemies of Israel by not just Oreb and Zeb, but in other ways too. Here are those words in Psalm 83, verse 9 through 12. Deal with them as with Midian, as with Sierra and Jabin at the torrent of Kishon, who were destroyed at Endor, who became as dung for the ground. Make their nobles like Oreb and Zeb, and all their princes like Zeba and Zalmunna, who said, let us possess ourselves the pastures of God. Now, what you don't know about this is you already know about Sisera and Jabin, because that was in Deborah's conquest in cycle 3. We're in cycle 4, and that's Oreb and Zeb. And you see Zeba and Zalmunna, that's also in cycle 4 where we are right now, and we haven't gotten to them yet. The question is here, these last two princesses, these were the kings. Oreb and Zeb were the military leaders. Zeba and Zalmunna were the kings of the Midianites, and they wanted the pastures of God. They wanted the promised land. Well, finally, chapter 7 ends with the words, and they brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon from across the Jordan. Then the first telling of the story found here at the end of chapter 7, our writer also tells us the movement of Gideon and his men while the Ephraimites were fulfilling their orders on the west side of the Jordan River. Gideon and his 300 men had crossed to the east side of the Jordan River in pursuit of some of the oppressors. The Ephraimites caught up with Gideon on the east side and presented him with the heads of Oreb and Zeb as proof that they had completed their task. Oreb and Zeb were the leaders, the military leaders of the Midianite forces. They were not the kings of Midian or the kings of the forces. We will learn about the kings later in this same story, but not today. Nevertheless, the writer tells us what they did with the heads of these military leaders. Was that the custom of that day and after? Absolutely. Many years after this point of the story, David will take the head of Goliath, the military leader of the Philistines, to Saul in 1 Samuel 17, verse 54. Goliath was not a king, but in a sense, he was a military leader of the Philistines. He was their fiercest warrior. Later, with the death of King Saul, his son Ishbosheth took the throne of King Saul and led some of the tribes of Israel for 2 years, while David was crowned king of the other tribes. And after 2 years of being king, Ishbosheth was murdered and his head was delivered to David as proof. That's in 2 Samuel chapter 4, verse 8. The practice of presenting the heads of the losing rulers or military leaders to the victors was common in that day. But with the Midianites and their allied forces defeated, 120,000 men to that point in the story, it would seem that the nation of Israel would be happy. But it was not the case. One of the tribes offended, and the nation of Israel had a complaint. Now, we don't know that this is 120,000 in the camp yet, but we will learn that soon also in this story. To make things more complicated, Gideon was not done with the Midianites. He had to still deal with these two kings and 15,000 more troops that were not dead yet. What are you telling me, Jim? We haven't learned, but it's coming in the story. There were 135,000 troops, but 15,000 of them were not in the Valley of Jezreel whenever Gideon attacked. And Gideon had to handle the 15,000 more. Well, Zeb was dead. Orb was dead. And I want you to remember what I've told you before. Military leaders and armies, military leaders of armies, in fact, the soldiers of the armies were easy to replace. They could be bought. But with kings, that was not so the case. A new king had to show his worth and gain the loyalty. Well, Gideon is still going after with his 300 men, these two kings that we heard about in the Psalms at the end of that Psalm 83. And he's going to deal with them. And he's arrived at a place called Karkor. K-A-R-K-O-R. Now to see what Gideon is going to do with those two kings, we'll have to come back again when we rejoin together for our next time in enjoying the Word of God.